Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, your conference co-host. Today, I'm speaking with Benjamin Mudge, the founder of Bipolar Disorder CIC, a not-for-profit company doing advocacy, education, mentoring, and research work for people with bipolar disorder. He's nearly finished a PhD in psychiatry at Flinders University, researching the therapeutic potential of ayahuasca for people with bipolar disorder. Benjamin Mudge, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome, and thank you for inviting me. And thanks to Ali.
Absolutely. So I know many people watching this might not be aware that two of the most common contraindications, which is just a big sciencey word for people, things that disqualify you from eligibility for a clinical trial on psychedelic medicine, are bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. And so it makes your personal story that much more compelling in that context. So I would love if you could share your personal story with bipolar disorder and mainstream psychiatry and why you're moved to motivate and develop new treatments.
Great. So I have bipolar disorder type 1, and I've been through the whole range of manic depressive symptoms. I've had a suicide attempt. I've had many years of depressed episodes and struggles in life, and some manic and psychotic episodes as well. I've been hospitalized. And I've been prescribed over the years in mainstream psychiatry 17 different kinds of psychiatric pharmaceutical drugs. The problem with those was, although some of them, to be fair, particularly lithium carbonate and lamotrigine, were helpful for me and got me functional, all of these prescription medications had pretty serious adverse effects, some more serious than others, and I just never had a solution to what I wanted in life, which is basically stability of my brain chemistry, but also retaining my creativity and my emotional sensitivity and spirituality and so on. So, and also, to be honest, some of these things were really problematic in terms of like weight gain and all sorts of other and cardiovascular issues and all sorts of other functional problems. So when my psychiatrist said there is no other option, I went, I just don't believe you, I'm going to walk away. So I quit mainstream psychiatry and I tried to find a solution myself using various herbal medicines, nutritional supplements, and I tried another at least 15 different kinds of herbal medicines, and they were, to be honest, quite problematic themselves. Eventually, I discovered ayahuasca. This is way back when it was very, very obscure. It was in England about 17 years ago. And to be honest, my first experience of that was terrible, but I have persevered trying to find a solution. And I've got there, basically. Do you want to know more about the psychiatric mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because as I think about, you know, psychedelics and all the science that's happening and all of the applications that it's being tested on, you know, bipolar and schizophrenia are like this no-go zone. And when I talk to researchers and doctors, that's really, from their perspective, if I can speak for them, which I shouldn't, but is a do no harm sort of, like they don't want to be responsible for offsetting any episodes of mania or depression, and they don't want to trigger episodes of schizophrenia, and they don't want to make anyone worse or instigate anything. And so it comes from such a good intentioned place, but at the same time, knowing what we know about trauma and about mental health disorders, and there's so much that can be helped with psychedelic medicine. And so it's like this whole, like the people who need the help the most and could benefit the most are possibly like completely not studied out of a risk factor. And so I think that's leading into what you might want to say just about kind of psychiatry in general and your thoughts and feelings about it.
Right. So the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, is like a fundamental principle for all medical doctors and psychiatrists. Great, I agree with that. But there's a few buts here. We have to be honest about iatrogenic harm, which is harm done to patients by prescription medications, right? So actually, what's going on out there in mainstream psychiatry is that the, especially the SSRI and SNRI psychiatric prescription antidepressants very often trigger manic episodes anyway, right? And then other things like, you know, cannabis and so on can trigger mania and psychosis as well. And, you know, alcohol's bad news too. So the underlying issue is that people with bipolar disorder have hypersensitive reactions, a hypersensitive nervous system, which includes hypersensitivity to trauma, to stress in general, to life events, to disturbances in sleep, circadian rhythms, and to all kinds of psychoactive substances. So, you know, one thing, by the way, to be honest, I have not drunk alcohol this millennium, and that is one of the reasons why I'm still alive, I think. So I've just realized that that's bad news for me. Same with weed, and I don't smoke, and I don't even eat chocolate, right? So my nervous system is very, very sensitive, and this is a common trait. So yes, I agree that there is a theoretical danger of triggering a manic and or psychotic episode in people with bipolar disorder when you give them psychedelics. And in fact, it's more than a theoretical thing. It is an anecdotally reported, very widely anecdotally reported problem. It does happen. We see it at psytrance festivals, and we see it, there's far too many cases of people smoking, bipolar people smoking too much weed, ending up manic and psychotic. But hang on a minute, this is also happening with the prescription drugs. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a vulnerability in the bipolar brain chemistry. All right, so I agree with the principle of doing no harm, and I'm grateful and I thank the doctors for being careful and being responsible. But the other thing is, what I really need to make clear about myself and all the bipolar people that I read about, and I'm in contact with over 100 bipolar people through either my own personal life or the coaching that I do. And what's clear is that doing nothing with psychedelics does not equal no harm. And that's because we have the highest suicide rate of any mental illness. According to most of the studies, anorexia nervosa is sometimes higher rated on that unfortunate scale. But basically, it's a big risk doing nothing. We will spontaneously suicide sooner or later anyway. So you got to balance these risks somehow. And what I'd really please, I beg the psychiatrists and psychedelic research scientists to understand that hope is the key here. So I know from the only time I attempted suicide was when I had literally given up hope, when I tried 17 meds and I tried all these other things and nothing was working. And I thought, well, this is never going to get better. And I know from, I know quite frankly, I get a lot of, feedback on social media and emails and so on from people with bipolar disorders. They're saying, thank God someone is trying to come up with a new medication to help our conditions because we hate these meds that we're taking. You know, the other thing about iatrogenic harm is, as well as the danger of psychiatric antidepressants triggering mania, let's be honest about the pretty serious adverse reactions to, like, the antipsychotics and to high doses of lithium carbonate, for example. We're talking not only weight gain, liver and kidney dysfunction, thyroid dysfunction, but some, you know, then cardiovascular things and erectile dysfunction to, you know, things like tardile dyskinesia. Do you even know what that is?
I don't. Please tell us.
That is where, so dyskinesia is kind of like involuntary muscular movements, and tardile means face. So it's like face, when people's face faces go into these completely uncontrollable, contorted spasms from their antipsychotics that their doctors gave them, right?
That sounds terrible.
It's terrible, and it's not being acknowledged by the psychiatric profession as that and the other all the many many other things, such as emotional numbness, wiping out creativity, disconnection from spiritual awareness, wiping out libido, and just this kind of disconnect. I know that I had a lot of disconnect from what was going on in my body, and there was a point at which I was had the early stages of cancer, and I wasn't really aware of this, and that's what made me quit, right? So that's got to be weighed up in the do no harm equation, in my opinion. So the problem with the term contraindicated, okay, contraindicated, one sec. Contraindicated is medical science terminology, which implies it's a statement of fact. It's like this is a medical fact, okay? Which implies that there have been double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials to prove that psychedelics are not safe for people with bipolar disorder. And that is plain wrong. Okay, so this contraindication status came about in the 1960s, basically, which is when there was a lot of mescaline and LSD being dosed out there in the world, and there was a lot of manic episodes happening as a result. And that's when the concerns were raised, and that's fair enough. But actually, although there are a lot of similarities with psychedelics in terms of the effects that they have on people's, the default neural network and their emotional awareness and being able to access trauma and perhaps spiritual insights and so on, the neurobiological mechanisms of all these different psychedelics like mescaline, LSD, psilocybin, DMT, ayahuasca, and MDMA, and PCP even, and ketamine and so on, they're all targeting different receptors in the brain. And although, for example, LSD and mescaline are usually known as 5-HT2A receptors, which is what DMT is, sorry, receptor agonist, which is what DMT is, right? LSD, for example, hits the dopamine receptors really hard as well as 5-HT2A. So that's a different mechanism, and then DMT does not do that. DMTX, this is Sigma 1, so on. This is all like fiddly stuff. The point is, I'm just trying to point out that you cannot make a sweeping generalization about psychedelics in terms of neurobiology. Certainly not saying all bipolar people are contraindicated with all psychiatric or all psychedelic drugs, right? It's totally illogical. Let's be honest, okay? This is what my appeal is. Actually, the reason why the psychedelic scientists are not allowing bipolar people into clinical trials is, now it's valid. Okay, you're too scared
Sorry, I want to
to.
pause you just for a second because you froze
Yeah.
right when you said is, and I don't want anybody to miss what you said. So the
Okay.
reason that bipolar people are taken out of the studies is.
Because the psychedelic scientists are too scared, all right? You're too scared to trigger a manic episode and/or a psychotic episode in bipolar brain chemistry. And you know what? That's a healthy decision, but just please be honest about it. Okay? And also, we're dealing with the situation that psychedelics in general are like, there's been a renaissance, but there was a year, there's kind of repair damage from the prohibition, right? So there's a PR thing, okay? And you're too scared to do something really risky that's going to risk your funding and the reputation of psychedelics in general, in terms of the law and in terms of academic credibility and public opinion and so on. And you know what? I agree. That's actually a healthy decision. I'd please just be honest about it. Okay? So when you say contraindicated, what you're saying, what this is how it's received to the bipolar people that I've spoken to. It's like medical fact. You're never ever going to get any of these benefits from psychedelics that are all out there in mainstream media, and everyone's going, psychedelics are going to heal the world and all this stuff. But not you, because medical fact, you're contraindicated. Well, you haven't done the medical trials. So don't use that language. Say, for example, hey, by the way, can you imagine what this does to an already suicidal ideation brain?
Yeah.
Right?
You were
It's
speaking
like,
about hope
there's no
earlier.
hope. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So please, this is what I'd like to be said from now on. Bipolar person, can I come and do your trial? Well, we really care about you. We acknowledge the fact that you have this suicide risk and you're depressed as hell. We acknowledge the fact that the medications that psychiatry is offering are pretty crap. We are really trying really hard to develop something that's going to work for you too. We are trying to engineer a solution to a very, very complicated problem. And we care about you, and we're trying not to do you any harm in the process of a clinical trial. So we're trying to work out this really complicated engineering problem. And it's going to take 5 or 10 years to get there. But please don't give up hope, because we value you and we're working towards that goal. Yeah, that's what I'd say. And I know that that would make a difference, because I know of the hundreds of bipolar people that have contacted me and said, wow, thank you for actually giving us some hope. When's your clinical trial? I say, I don't know, 5, 10 years. And they go, okay, I'll wait. As long as I know that something's coming down the line. Okay. The other thing is, by the way, about the contraindication status, is in those few clinical trials where they have done, where they have used a psychedelic, actually it's been either ketamine, low dose, or psilocybin, low dose, in a currently depressed phase of a bipolar disorder type 2 person, which is the one that's the type that is less likely to have a manic episode. Then do you know what? There's almost zero manic episodes, like, and significant benefits. And there's been numerous trials that have come out, and I hope to send people the references. So actually, this is looking pretty good.
There is a lot of hope from what I'm hearing you say. And it reminds me a little bit anecdotally, they're not the same, but just how long, for all pharmaceutical drugs were only tested on white male men. And that left anybody of color and women to report side effects or to report, the ways that they were feeling and then be gaslit because, well, that can't be true because that's not what's normal. That's not how you're supposed to feel. And meanwhile, we were all like, but that's how I feel. And it wasn't until like 2016 that they started studying the way that mental health medication would impact people of color and women. Like they just didn't want that pesky estrogen messing with the results. And, because then they darn estrogen. So like it's not the same, but I really can kind of relate a little bit to being like, wait a minute, like shouldn't we be thoroughly testing all humans that will benefit and need help the most to see what's going to happen? And obviously having somebody like you, I mean, let's talk about your professional background a little bit because we've talked about your, psychiatric
Sure.
background, but I want to
Can I
talk
just
about,
comment? Can I just comment in response to a couple of things? So, yes, agreed. And part of the reason, although it's not a justification, but part of the reason why they were excluding women in those trials was because it's just too complicated in terms of study methodology, okay? Design, and getting it funded and getting it through ethics and so on. So bipolar people are just too complicated a variable to throw in and to study design. And I understand that, and that's okay. Just be honest about it. And that's what's happening in the early stages. But now that we're in, that we've had the psychedelics renaissance and psychedelics in our mainstream, and funding is huge, then include us. The other thing I think that's really, really important to realize about a an unintended effect of excluding bipolar people is parallel to, you can probably relate with your heritage, backyard abortions. Okay, so if people are, if something's ex if women are excluded from the possibility of having legal, safe, healthy abortions, then they're desperate, so they're going to do it anyway, some of them. So then you end up with this mess, right? It's tragic. And that's what's happening with bipolar people, is quite frankly, they're just accessing psychedelics anyway because they're desperate. Like I know I've done so many desperate things, and all these people that I'm speaking on their behalf do desperate things on a regular basis to because they're suicidal. I mean, that should, hopefully you can understand that. Okay. So they lie on the on going to ayahuasca retreats anyway, and then they go and they have a mess, or they lie on the psilocybin retreats, they go and have a mess, or they get it, they buy ketamine off the dark web and they do it and they go manic, and they, or they go, there's, or they go with these dodgy people and they get really low quality medicine. In the case of ayahuasca, that can be very dangerous if it's laced, if it's made with Pegnum Harmonga, or if it's got some scopolamine in it or something like that. It'd be a total disaster. They're going to do it anyway, and or I know of people going and getting ripped off financially, getting sexually abused by the facilitators, and all these absolute disasters that are happening because the like the mainstream is excluding them, right? So please, let's work together to include and engineer a solution for bipolar people. Okay.
Absolutely. And then, you're speaking from experience, but you're also speaking from your professional life as well, which was what inspired your professional life, was your, personal experience. So, you're not only a coach, but you're advocating for change and doing studies. And so tell us a little bit about your work as well in relationship to this field.
Well, it started off me just desperately trying to heal and coming to ayahuasca, getting some really good results in the Santo Daime tradition, which, by the way, uses a very particular recipe for the ayahuasca. And then I moved to Australia, to an area called Byron Bay, and what's happened, it's a tropical area, and what's happened is the some of the ayahuasca plants have been imported in suitcases from the Amazon, planted in the tropical areas of Byron Bay, and are growing. So it was then possible for me to make my own ayahuasca and fiddle about with the recipe and trying to figure out a recipe and a cooking technique and so on that would work to balance my brain. Because basically what I was finding is there's, in my personal experience, there's lots of different recipes for ayahuasca, which have lots of different ratios of the at least seven psychoactive ingredients. So if the parallel is medical cannabis, right? So, well, cannabis strains. Okay, so we know that, there are some that are really mellow and balancing strains of cannabis, whereas you've got skunk that makes people paranoid and psychotic and so on. That's about the ratio of THC to CBD and some other ingredients. Ayahuasca's got similar ratio variability. Actually, a lot wider variability, to be honest. And the point being, in my theory, which is now evidence-based from chromatography studies that I've done through my university research, there's basically, if you get the balance of these ratios in this particular way, then you can balance the brain chemistry of bipolar people, and you can have, certainly in my case, but I have evidence of other people as well. so that they can have the psychedelic benefits without going manic, to be honest, and the antidepressant benefits from the ayahuasca without going manic. So that's the conclusion of my PhD, that it actually started in cooking in the rainforest in Byron Bay. And then I realized, actually, I was at the time I was on disability support pension, which is quite good in Australia. And I realized, well, I could do one of two things. I could either sit on this on my own, go to the beach, play my guitar in a rainforest, and drink ayahuasca and get the pension for the rest of my life, or I could try to get this out there. And what I and because I'm an activist, going back, several decades, I went, I have to get this out there. My compassion to all these people suffering in the hospitals and at home, and all the suicides, and then and favorite people of mine like Amy Winehouse, Robin Williams suiciding. It was just like, oh, this is too much. I have to do something. And so I applied for a PhD in a psychiatry department and got a scholarship and went on. And it's been a lot of work and it's been very difficult. And I've had quite strikingly different responses. So I've had some people who get me and actually support me and put me on a platform like ICEAS at the World Ayahuasca Conference Breaking Convention. And select scientists, particularly like David Nichols. But I've also had, quite frankly, some people trying to shut me down from speaking, literally, because of that this fears contraindication about contraindication. And what I believe has happened in psychedelic research is that bipolar has become a cultural taboo within the culture. With it's like, oh, we it's too weird, too scary, we're too controversial, we're just not going to talk about it, we're going to sweep it under the carpet. To the point where, I've had people who are like starting up psychedelic a startup, right? Trying to do a clinical trial. And they'd said to me, look, we just had so much peer pressure that you just have to exclude bipolar. You just write it in big black letters. We dare not, we promise we won't touch bipolar people. It's kind of like a taboo. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
Good news is, for me personally, I've been off psychiatric pharmaceutical drugs for 16 or 17 years. And so as a to simplify this study, so there's a kind of a controlled study, I just don't have any other psychoactive substances in my bloodstream, right? So ayahuasca is the only variable that can either be, if something's going well or going badly, it's because of the ayahuasca, right? So I've managed, and in that time, I can't say it's been easy, because some of the ayahuasca brews that I've had have been terrible for me, and I have actually once gone totally psychotic, some I've gone manic. But when I've been cooking it my own way, I've been getting these results, and I've basically been stabilizing my brain chemistry, so my baseline is a lot better. I've been developing this like self-awareness and self-discipline around when when I'm escalating towards mania. I realize that, and I have this, how psychedelics like make you more empathic and socially con con your social conscience is heightened. So I'm like, I don't want to put my friends and my family through the nightmare of me going manic again, because it hurts them too, right? And I can be a real pain in the ass when I'm manic, to be honest. So I've learned to see that, to have the awareness to others that I don't want to annoy them, and then to like discipline myself to do the things that I need to do to chill. And I have been gradually healing quite a lot of trauma, and that's been going well. And and the major kind of unpredicted effect was like my spiritual awareness and creativity have increased, basically.
And you know, as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about people at home, whether they love somebody with bipolar disorder or they are someone with bipolar disorder, and I can feel my like protective parts popping up and saying like, I don't want them to watch this and listen to this and hear I should stop taking my meds, because a
Yeah.
lot of, and a lot of these psychedelic drugs, that is the recommended, you know, even if you're part of a research study, you have to wean off a lot of drugs. And I actually just heard a horrible story literally from a neighbor yesterday about somebody that was trying to get into a ketamine trial. They had to wean off of their drugs and died of self-inflicted, right?
Yeah.
And it's crushing and heartbreaking. So I have that on my heart as I'm listening to you speak, and also want to send the distinct message to people that like pharmaceutical drugs are not perfect and there are a ton of side effects and they're not great for a lot of people. And also the message that we're sending here is not get off of them right away.
I absolutely. Look, I get asked this question so many times. Can you hit me up? Can you hook me up with an ayahuasca ceremony that you recommend? And I'm sick of these drugs, so I come off them. I plant medicines are surely better than pharmaceuticals. These sorts of themes. Okay. So I now obviously there's like legal restrictions on me recommending this, but this I gotta say, this is not about the legal things. Okay. If there was places you could go, I would send people there. If it was simple to just come off your pharmaceuticals, I would say do that, but no, it's not that simple and it really is not safe. So as you pointed out, firstly, there's like this, to be honest, this I'm not idealistic about the ayahuasca community that's out there. There's a lot of like almost kind of snobbishness, like spirituality's more, is superior to science, and kind of like just basically going, in this case, advising people to go against their prescription medication, and to come off. And then what happens basically is people, if you come off an SSRI, it might stay in your bloodstream for about 3 weeks, same as when you start an SRI, SSRI doesn't kick in for about 3 weeks. So you might get this kind of period, okay, and you're okay in about 3 weeks, then you do the ayahuasca ceremony, or the ketamine or the psilocybin, these are the other things that are happening. And that may hopefully help people for 1 to 4 weeks maybe max. And then what? Right? And then they get it, that's died out, and then they crash back into suicidal ideation because they've now been like 7 weeks off their antidepressant pharmaceuticals. And that's just grossly irresponsible, I think. And so what I'd like to see is like a collaboration between psychiatrists and an informed retreat center, and a protocol that was specially developed for bipolar people, which would include, for example, doing the ceremonies during the daytime rather than all night and messing up the sleep cycles. But what I think, to be honest, the phytochemistry is the biggest issue. So the basically when people go to an ayahuasca ceremony, it's kind of becoming as vague as we're going to go eat a curry at a curry house. Okay? Because the ayahuasca could be made with lots of different plants. So, Banisteriopsis carpi, Banisteriopsis muricata, Alicia anisopetala, Pegnum hamala, and so on. And that's just for the hamalas. And then the DMT, it could be chacruna, it could be chaliponga, it could be jurema, it could be one of the many acacias, and so on. And they've all got different phytochemistry, and some of them have got these other things in there. So the chromatography from the lab from my PhD was done by these experts in Estonia, and it shows that actually quite a lot of the ayahuasca has got these other rogue, unpredictable and mania triggering ingredients in it. For example, bufotenin, right? Or
Is the nickname for that Bufo? I feel like I've heard that
Okay, so
before.
bu the Bufo tenaris toad from Mexico contains 5-methoxy-DMT and bufotenin. Okay, so bufotenin is in some brews of ayahuasca, depending on which plant it's made from. For example, scopolamine, it's a terrible psychotic freak out thing from Datura. That's in some ayahuasca brews. And then the Peganum harmonga, it basically spikes the dopamine and various other ingredients. So, and they're all called ayahuasca out there in the market of the hippie market of ayahuasca ceremonies. That's not really scientifically, not much of it is like science informed. To be fair, like the UDV religion are pretty on scientifically aware, but so it's quite random. What are you going to be drinking? You don't know, and it all looks brown and tastes terrible. You can't tell the difference unless you really trust the person who cooked it, and you can find out exactly. So, and this is before they know how to look after bipolar people, and then this is before the consideration of that, are they gonna offer you marijuana in the form of Santa Maria, or are they gonna blow high nicotine tobacco up your nose and say, "Oh, this is sacred medicine," and so on. These are also triggers for manic episodes. So that's been when I've done all these interviews with other bipolar people who have drunk ayahuasca. When it goes bad, it's usually, to be honest, because it's been one of these psychedelic cocktails. They go to the ceremony, and either their sleep is messed up, or they have a combination of ayahuasca with some other substance, and they combine together and trigger mania. So, to be honest, I hate to say this, but the thing that I say is, please be patient and wait till there's a clinical trial of a safe of as sorry, I can't even say it's safe, but as least unsafe, right? Harm minimization version of basically medical ayahuasca that's been lab tested, and where the whole ceremony is designed to avoid manic episodes and to support bipolar special needs. That's what I'm working towards, and I think it's possible. And ideally, I would do a trial, and then it would be like rolled out to the various retreat centers. I think it's fair to do for a retreat center in Peru or California or wherever, to 1 in 20, which is roughly the population of bipolar sort of type 1, type 2, and psychothymia added together, but 1 in 20, 5% of the population, right? So 1 ceremony in 20, to do it different. Do it for the bipolar people with this different recipe in the daytime, no weed, no hapé, and so on. I think that's fair.
Seems like a reasonable request, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's not even to say that bipolar people are not a monolith either. So there's the ayahuasca part of like, let's figure out that part, and then let's also know and as much as we can understand the individuals that we're trying to treat and help as well, because I don't think that you would say that they're a monolith either, right?
No, there's a lot of variability. Just in type 1 to type 2, that in psychothymia, that's a huge brain chemistry variability. But there's different cultural backgrounds, there's different traumas, there's different addictions, there's comorbidities which vary, and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you speculatively, how far out do you think we are from a legit bipolar clinical trial scenario?
I think it's possible within 5 years. I think it's because Well, if I could find some people who are willing to take on board everything that I've learned so far in this recipe, then you'd have to go through ethics, and you'd have to get the legal stuff, and you'd have to do the study design and all the rest of it, and raise the funds and so on. But that could be done within 5 years.
That's hopeful. Yeah. And
That's basically, that's what I'm working towards.
any last words of encouragement or of an infusion of hope for those people who are either bipolar and listening or love someone who is?
What I know is that there are, although relatively small numbers, there are enough people who are really, really care about this issue to take it on and work towards a solution. There's a lot of people that understand the condition and understand the problems of iatrogenic harm from the available medications, and are working towards new, better solutions. And in, so I feel certain now that it will happen sooner or later. I acknowledge that it sucks to wait in the meantime in the current condition. I do say there are actually a lot of things that can be done to, I'd say strike a balance between psychiatric meds and like the high doses of psychiatric meds and the condition itself. So, actually finding a progressive psychiatrist who's willing to talk about nutrition, who's willing to talk about adverse effects, and strike a deal with you about lowering the dose if you stop smoking weed and stop drinking alcohol, for example, and doing all these trigger things, and get your like lifestyle more structured and so on. So do the things that you can do, which are within your power. So rather than being rebellious against the psychiatrist and the high doses of the medication and getting in the mess, it's actually do self-constructive things and minimize the things that you're doing, which are unhealthy, which make you need to have such a high dose of these meds in the first place. And that, all of that, getting all that sorted, is going to be an absolutely necessary prerequisite to being in a clinical trial with ayahuasca anyway. So you can do the preparation work. For example, although it hasn't been studied, there is enough anecdotal evidence out there that says that lamotrigine, which is an antidepressant and mood stabilizer to some extent, is not contraindicated with ayahuasca MAOIs, whereas some of the other, well, basically all the SSRIs and SNRIs are widely believed to be contraindicated. So that's, you could look at, getting onto some of those meds, and then you're like one step closer. See what I'm saying? Progress can be made, and keep the hope going, because never give up hope. I'm so glad that the one day I gave up hope and attempted suicide, it wasn't meant to be, and I'm really glad that it didn't work out. And because eventually, through dedication and discipline and a lot of luck and some support from the right people, and the blessings of ayahuasca, I have actually got a good life now.
That's what I want everybody to hear. Yeah. And we're really glad too.
And
And
this and you know and it's happening out there. It's not just ayahuasca. There is like the psilocybin trials, that have happened, they have mainstream trials, and that's hopefully going to be rolled out as well. It's probably, psilocybin is going to work for some people, ayahuasca will work for other people, ketamine will work for other people, and so on. But there's multiple avenues in the psychedelic realm that are opening up, and a lot that can be done in the meantime as well.
Absolutely. Benjamin, how can people find out more about you and your work?
Bipolardisorder.me is my website. It's kind of easy. It's not supposed to be about me. It's supposed to eventually be a like an online resource for those of us to self-help. It's kind of like eventually, hopefully, going to be a self-education, self-help website. But it's on there. Stuff is on there at the moment.
Fantastic. Benjamin, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And I hope that everybody got as much hope out of it as I did.
Great. I'm happy, and I'm really grateful to have, to be included with a controversial perspective in your conference. It's a real honor, and I thank you for myself and all the people that, want me to be speaking up about this.
You got it. I don't think there's anything controversial about wanting to help people, especially those in most need. Benjamin Mudge, thank you again.
Thank you.